Tell me if I'm National Demographic Corporation.
Yes.
I could have guessed. You look like a demographer. Nice to meet you, Doug.
Nice to meet all of you.
You go by Doug or Douglas?
Just Doug.
Yeah, I just want to know. I'm the same way.
My name is Douglas, but I go by George.
Are you going to introduce yourself? This is Chuck.
Oh, I'm Chuck. I'm not Doug.
And I'm Nellie. You know Jim.
Hey, Doug.
Hello.
I'm Rochelle with Park District.
And I'm Aline, Jim's assistant and the board secretary. Very nice to meet you. Welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. Who are you?
So I think we're 2 minutes. We'll be starting. Just wanted to say hi, and we have you available so you can chat if there's questions.
Perfect. Thank you.
So do we like have to officially open this meeting or anything? That's okay, because I've got this. We're going to have this as a call for order and a flag salute. And since I haven't asked anyone, I'll go ahead and lead us in the salute. So let's stand. Put your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. Okay, roll call. Okay, Director Cusworth, here. Director Holt. Director Lang.
Here.
Director Hupper.
Yes.
Director Nichols.
Yes.
So is there anyone online from the public?
Chris can be a panelist as well. But
no comments. All right. And so we have a new item. We're going to talk about the resolution of intent to transition to by director division elections. So I'll turn this over to Mr. Frito.
Yes, thank you, Chair Cusworth and members of the board. I have the very limited responsibility tonight to just do some introductions and then pass it over to Melissa Smith, who's going to talk a little bit about what we're doing, and then we're going to rely heavily on our experts that we've retained. So my introductions are going to be, we have Doug Johnson from National Demographics Corporation. He's the president, and they represent a ton of public agencies, not just here in California, but all across the United States. He's been doing this a while. And the legal counsel that we've retained is Chris Skinnell. And, you know, Chris, I apologize. I don't use you guys enough to remember Merck's, what's the firm?
Nielsen Merckxer.
So, and we're joined here by Chris, and he's an attorney that specializes in sort of election law in this area as well. So we've got some really talented people joining us here to have a conversation about the letter we received from attorney Kevin Shankman. So Melissa?
Sure. So just a quick note, it's commonly referred to as districting and redistricting because we're a district. That's super confusing. So we're using division. So it's two divisions instead of districting. So that makes more sense. The background that I know that you all are pretty familiar with, the district's currently in at-large elections. In recent years, multiple public agencies have been sued under the California Voting Rights Act. The plaintiffs allege that the at-large system for elections results in a difference in electoral choices preferred by voters of a protected class, and they typically demand transition to this by-division system. Because of all these lawsuits, in 2016, there was a law passed by the legislature to establish a safe harbor from this litigation for public agencies. This option caps the attorney fees that a plaintiff can recover. If there is a change to by division elections within a particular time frame. So as these lawsuits have been going on for a while, the state weren't surprised that it's our turn on the list of whatever's going on. So when we got the letter on September 29th, we reached out to our awesome resources on the screen for you and they provided basically three options to the district, a voluntary transition to in the use of that safe harbor option, going into litigation or doing nothing and waiting to see if litigation would come. The last two options, when attempted by other agencies, have been extraordinarily expensive. And even a do-nothing option leaves us vulnerable to losing that option of a safe harbor option. And in the staff report, I go into some details about estimated cost. And I also link to the various Ventura County agencies that have made this decision and their very detailed analysis about how expensive it's been when they fought. So the recommendation is that from a financially prudent standpoint, it would be good to use the safe harbor option, but that's why we have them here to answer your more detailed questions than I'm available for them, but they're probably better to answer.
So are there any questions for our experts here?
Yes.
Mr. Nichols.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here with us. And I understand you both have been down this path before, so appreciate your time and expertise and experience. As Melissa was stating, obviously there are some financial considerations as whether you want to go down this path. But I'm just trying to think of, you know, the practical or pragmatic, if someone were to come to this board and say, hey, have you folks ever considered of going by division? Thinking without the money behind it, what are the pros and cons to going through that from, you know, what you've heard from those folks who have done this, whether it's actually getting the representation as the Voters Act hopes to get, or just the day-to-day operations of, you know, what's found to be valuable and what's found to be a little bit detrimental about that process. If you could maybe just quickly explain that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I think it really kind of depends on the district. Every district has its own culture and has its own sort of internal relationships. And so, not loud enough?
We're turning you up.
Okay. Right, so what I was saying is every district has its own culture. And so things that might be detrimental in some places are not necessarily detrimental in others. In terms of downsides, districts can, in some cases, be balkanizing. You know, everyone starts to focus on their own area. But that's not universally the case. I mean, in my experience, some places where that's mostly been a problem are places that already have, I don't want to say toxic, but difficult relationships on the board to begin with. And so that it can exacerbate them, but it's not inevitable that that happens. In terms of the upsides, you know, I think it does make it easier to run for and less expensive to run for the board. You know, it makes it more accessible in some respects to candidates who might not otherwise consider running on a district-wide basis. There's kind of been arguments back and forth over the pros and cons of districts for 100 plus years. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, the legislature has put their thumb on the scale one way or the other. So, there's no reason to assume that it will necessarily be a problem, but sometimes it can be complicated.
Yeah. And I would agree with everything Chris just said. And just to kind of encapsulate the culture thing, one thing we've found, we thought there'd be a lot faster change in the kind of tone of different elected bodies. But what we've really found is that when board members who have been elected at large transition to by division elections, not much changes. Because, you know, even if people can no longer vote for you, you still know them. You're still going to take their calls and so on. It's only when you get a board that has never, where a majority of the members have never run at large, when the culture kind of is at risk of changing. And the thing I always say is, encourage people who want to run for office not to say, I'm going to fight for District 1. Because if you say, I'm going to fight for District 1, well, then the folks running for Districts 2, 3, 4, and 5 all have to say, I'm going to fight for us. And that's how you get that poisonous atmosphere. You know, if you're going to fight for District 1, well, you're making it a 4-to-1 fight against you, and how much are you going to get passed? So that's a big part, is think of this as more just an election thing, not a... The thing to avoid is this is not making you into the county supervisors. You know, the the board members elected from each district will not have control and power over their district. It still takes a majority vote of the board to do anything. So it will still be, how do you get the board to work as one, not just convince your guy and that, or your gal and that makes a decision.
Yeah. Thank you. I was just thinking that, having just completed another campaign, a couple of us here, through that process, and hearing from some of our school board members who are already in the division process, and kind of, hey, how'd it go for you? How'd it go for you? Kind of hearing some of that. But that was just strictly from the campaigning perspective. That's what I was thinking, more from the operations perspective, you know, one set is that. So I find it interesting, your comment, Doug, about the culture of those who have gone through at large. And, you know, as we go through this, you know, 4 years later, when, you know, maybe those people on the board, whoever that happens to be, have never gone through at large, where that maybe that culture could change. Is that what you're saying, that maybe somewhere in the future there could be maybe that change as time goes on?
I would say yes, there can be. It's not inevitable. I've worked with lots and lots, especially special districts in particular, I would say, where that never really becomes a thing. You know, it just over time continues to be collegial. And so there's no reason to assume that that's going to be the case, but it's a possibility.
And one thing that I found that neither one of you said, but what I've heard from our other districts in rural parts of the state, is we can't get five people to run for office now. We're running at a deficit. You know, we only have three board members. We only have four members. It's like, that would kill us if we had to go through that process. Obviously, we have a larger community, not as large as some, where I think we probably won't end up with that scenario, but there are districts, and I guess that goes back to your point, Chris, you know, each district is a little bit different.
Yeah.
That might be a problem for some of those smaller districts.
It absolutely is. And the size of your district is why I didn't mention that, actually, it crossed my mind. But we've Doug and I have both done school districts, for example, in the Central Valley, where they each have like 100 voters per trustee area. Right. So you're like, well, you got to talk somebody into agreeing to serve, and you only have 100 people who are eligible. That can be tough, you know. So that is in some places a problem. I think you're probably big enough that, you know, knock on wood, that won't be, but some places it has been.
The other benefit I'll mention too, I forgot about this earlier, is it will make your elections cheaper for the district. The fees you pay to the county, you know, that's driven by how many registered voters are participating in the election. And now when three seats are up, you'll only have 60% of your voters. And when two seats are up, you'll only have 40% of your voters. So you will see a little bit of savings in elections where you don't put if you're not putting any kind of ballot measure on the ballot, your cost per election will go down for just the district's administrative fees from the county.
That's true.
Thank you.
So yes, Director Lane.
Yes, and I haven't discussed this with our general manager, the process of a board meeting when you have different areas represented. Do you only vote on items related to your specific area?
I would just say, in terms of trying to retain the culture of looking at the entire district systemically, I've talked to other general managers and have gotten some good tips. And I do believe this board instinctively still looks at the system, but to protect future boards from becoming balkanized, we can build into our norms, guidelines, and standards sort of, you know, that ethic of looking out for the entire agency, that we have a system, that just because one district has a $2 million skate park, that doesn't mean we get a $2 million skate park in every single all five districts or something, that some things that we do are going to be unique to that area, that kind of thing. And we just have to build that in to our, you know, our norms, standards, and guidelines.
Okay. So in our agenda packet, will there be a separation for each district? I mean, item number 5, what is B or something like that, is for Doug's, and then we don't have to deal with that?
No. I don't actually foresee any change in terms of how staff provides staff reports. We will continue to think of us as a system in a district. I could foresee that in the future, some board member will say, well, how much have we spent on capital in Division 5 versus Division 1 versus that? I can see starting to happen, and we may have to have some financial reporting or whatever that has a, you know, keeps tally of that. We do a pretty good job of that right now because the district is already split into the 6 planning zones. And I can tell you how much we spend in any planning zone right now, but it's just another way of keeping track of things.
Now, from those agencies that have already done this, are there any indications of specific problems that this generates and that there is some group of those who have had some problems start talking about another process and, you know, go through for the state to nullify this? I'm sorry.
There's been constant talk of going to the state for changes, all of which has run into a huge brick wall. You know, there's some small changes and process changes that have happened, but in terms of relieving the burden of the law, no, it's not.
There wouldn't be a time where people say, we've got to change this law.
No, not where you get any share of the legislature to support you. Just to give you the horror story is, at the time when the mayor of Rancho Cucamonga was president of the League of Cities, Rancho Cucamonga was sued by mistake under this law. They meant to sue Chino, but they were careless and sued the wrong city. And it was a total disaster. It ended up still costing Rancho Cucamonga hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they actually ended up going to districts. And even that debacle with the mayor being the president of the League of Cities, they couldn't even get a bill written, much less introduced or passed. So yeah, it's not going anywhere.
The dynamic that you run into politically is no legislator wants to be voting to cut back on voting rights. Right. I mean, we all understand that it's more complicated than that, but that's the headline. You know, Assemblyperson X votes against voting rights. And then there's never been any sort of any stomach for any significant change. And I don't see there being any in the foreseeable future.
Yeah. To the point about the staff reports and the budgets and all that, you know, the key thing to remember is that legally, these districts matter one day every 2 years. That's the only legal definition and impact they have. Everything else is the culture that Chris was talking about and how you operate yourselves as a board. So that is the idea of trying to, while you're still members who've been elected at large, you're looking into the future to establish that culture, is we're still representing and interested in the whole district and to try to build that history so that it doesn't become that kind of split up. The horror story we've seen, there's one city where they went to districts long, long ago, and it did give in that case, a Latino unrepresented population representation on the council. But you don't have this, but cities have things that they have to approve that they don't want, you know, strip clubs, liquor stores, trash facilities, you know, cities have to give them somewhere in the city. So they agreed, let's dump them all in District X. And for 30 years, everything that they had to approve went into that district. And the other council members knew if they spoke up and helped that council member, well, then it would simply move to their district. And so that's kind of the horror story. Now, thankfully, you don't, as a Reagan Parks district, you don't have those kinds of things. But that is kind of the example of, yes, everyone still votes on what impacts all districts, all divisions in your case. And hopefully you'll continue to do it from a benevolent and what's important for the good of all the district approach.
Thank you.
So, Director Hopper.
Yeah, we haven't heard very much either. We've had a closed session a few weeks ago, in the beginning so far, as to, and I guess, Doug, this would be your area, how you go about deciding how you divide our district up into the 5 divisions. And the other question that occurred to me was, you know, every 10 years they go through each state goes through changing their various election areas based on the census.
Yeah.
Do agencies like ours, which have, I guess, typically five divisions, would they every 10 years have to go through a process of changing their boundaries? And the reason, one of the things that occurred to me was there's a lot of talk at the city that there's going to be a lot of new residential building, and most of it's going to be concentrated in a relatively narrow area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly possible that the population in that relatively narrow area will increase much faster than the population in the overall city.
Right.
Chris, do you want to address the criteria and the population?
Yeah, I mean, so just to your second point, the answer is yes. Every 10 years following the census, you will have to rebalance the population to be roughly equal. It's not perfectly equal, but it's roughly equal. And to your sort of broader question, how do you go about doing this? For special districts, actually have a fair amount of discretion, unlike cities and counties, which are much more limited now. Special districts have to comply with the equal population requirements that we just talked about. They have to comply with the Federal Voting Rights Act, which in your case is not going to be difficult to do, given your demographics. There's nothing to do under the California Voting Rights Act after you move to districts. It doesn't have anything to say about what the district's divisions look like, just that they exist. And so within those sort of outer parameters, which Doug and I will help you with, but again, those given your circumstances are going to be fairly easy, you have a lot of discretion within those boundaries to kind of come up with districts that just sort of make sense, right, from a representational perspective. Jim mentioned your six planning areas. Obviously it's six instead of five, but that might be a sort of natural starting point to kind of sketch out areas, and then you make adjustments to even out the population from there. On the other hand, maybe you think that's a terrible idea, and you know, in your discretion and your wisdom can choose not to do that. But you have a lot of ability to really sort of consider any sort of rational, legitimate purpose in terms of just drawing districts that make sense from a good representation perspective.
Yeah.
Just the one last thing. The one sort of upside of choosing to do this process voluntarily instead of waiting for litigation is that you're in control of it. You know, once it goes to court, if you move to districts, then there's always the possibility that the court gets involved and then the plaintiffs have a say, and then you have a lot less discretion. If you do it now, you control the process and you control what the districts look like.
And I was just going to add to what Chris was saying, so we can take into account where elected officials live. So we can try to make sure that each of you ends up in another seat, or at least if someone's announced that they're retiring and not going to run again, we usually don't worry about it. But it's perfectly legal, and we actually recommend it for special districts because it can be hard to get people to run. To Chris's point about the planning areas, one of the things we often do with schools who have attendance areas is we'll draw one map that shows you kind of how it looks if we try to focus on those and have roughly one trustee per school. And then we do the exact opposite. You know, here we might say, let's take a map that kind of aligns with your planning areas as much as we can. And then one that says, let's have three board members touching every planning area, so that you have a mix, and it's kind of two different approaches, and you can give us direction early on, or you can wait and see the maps and decide which you like better. But, do you want future board members to kind of concentrate on their area, or do you want to kind of draw the line so it almost forces a majority of the board to say, I represent this area, and so they speak up for it. So they're two very different approaches. And as Chris said, thankfully, you have the flexibility as a special district to see what makes sense for you and just like the option you wish.
And I know that's kind of very high level, but if you move forward with this, the first public hearing, you know, there will be a more detailed presentation that will talk about some of the sort of traditional districting criteria that places tend to use and walking through that in some more detail. But the way it typically works is we get your feedback on what you think is important. And then, you know, Doug will go forth and come back with some options. And you'll have an opportunity to look at them and say, you know, I like map A, I hate map B, let's get rid of it. I like map C, but can we tinker with it a little bit? You know, it's meant to be sort of an iterative process so you can see options and adjust accordingly.
Okay, any more questions?
I do, but you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. I was just wondering, the Santa Monica case that's going on right now, do you think that if they won, that's going to make any difference? You were saying that, no, you don't think that there's going to be any change in the law. But if that went through and they didn't have to go to special districts, would it be possible for us in the future to say, well, based on that precedent, we're now going to go back to a general election if we don't like the districts? From a legal standpoint.
Yeah. Possibly. You know, we don't know. So assuming that they win, right? And makes me a little nervous that the court even took the case to begin with. So I'm not holding my breath. But assuming that they win, it really depends on what the rationale is. You know, if they were to flat out adopt the rationale that the Court of Appeal adopted, then I think given your demographics, yeah, that might be a viable option, right? Because the theory of the Court of Appeal was that the protected class population is so small that you couldn't really say that districts made a meaningful difference, right? If that's what the Supreme Court says too, then yeah, that might work. But they could also come up with some entirely different rationale for it. And until we know that, it's just, we can't really say one way or the other. I would note that your resolution of intent does sort of hold open that door for reconsideration at some point. But, you know, until the court actually hears argument, they still haven't even done that, and then rules, we just don't know what our options are going to be yet.
My other question is, in the districts that would be made up, would the director that was elected to that district have any authority over that district or anything that's going on? For example, I'm very involved in an organization that's part of CRPD, but it's in Newberry Park. I live in Thousand Oaks. Whereas Director Huffer is very involved in soccer, which the soccer fields would be in my district and not in his.
Mm-hmm.
Or would it just be that, you know, so, or are we all just, I think what you said is we're all going to work together. But if, let's say, somebody wanted to do something, you know, at the Stagecoach Inn, let's say Director Nichols,
mm-hmm.
or me, would I have to go through whoever is over Newberry Park before I could interact with them?
No. I mean, unless the district adopted some internal policy, but no, and in normal circumstances, that would not be how it would work. You know, you're still perfectly free to deal with people in other districts. Nobody, it's not like a little fiefdom of your own. It's just where you're elected from, and then you represent the entire district.
Okay, that's what I assumed, but I thought I'd bring that up. Also, you probably wouldn't know, Melissa, just off, you know, off the cuff, but how much would we save in each election? I mean, is it like, you know, $500 or $50,000 or?
I feel like each election is about 50. The last one might have been smaller, maybe, but anyway.
Yeah. I think our general election can run close to 60 to 100.
Okay. So, you know, divide that 40% and 60%. So
a lot of times it'll depend on what else is on the ballot at that given time. So we pay like our proportionate share of the total cost of the ballot. So the more stuff that's on there, the less our overall cost of it is.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some variability, but I'd say between 60 and 100 per election. So we'd save half that, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just having another question. For a district our size, does it Does it promote more people to run for election for, say, like they don't have to run against, you know, five people, they only have to run against maybe one? Do more people, you know, enter the race, or do you know?
It depends. I'll tell you, it depends on the type of jurisdiction. I think it encourages people to run more in city council, for example. Special district boards, that's not necessarily the case, because they tend to be a little bit less high profile. So, you know, it's hard to predict. It just depends on the local community and who's interested. And, you know, it can vary over time even.
It makes it a lot less expensive to run. So it takes that out, and, you know, mail becomes less important because it's easier to shake everyone's hand. And, you know, if a voter has shook your hand, they're probably going to ignore the mail. So it helps on that front. At the same time, it makes it personal. So, you know, you have, if the office holder in that district is running for re-election, then you have to run against that office holder. So it does make it easier. So that increases the number of people, but at the same time, it makes it a little more personal. So discourage people a little bit. People will say, well, I'll wait until the current office holder retires before I run, rather than jumping in when there's three or two seats open. Mm-hmm. So like Chris said, the end result is it varies. And you're unusual in that you're a larger special district that has relatively active elections. We have a lot of jurisdictions that, you know, they beg people to take a vacant seat when they're at large, and districts are terrifying to them.
Yes, George.
Yes, what is kind of listening to the discussion and certain things, Glorious, what impact does this have on the Brown Act? And I see more interaction being required, you know, like an example that Director Cusworth mentioned, you know, one area, the Stagecoach Inn Museum and for the soccer and so forth. And in order to get more information about a particular, because we're all quote unquote still supposed to be involved as a whole, mm-hmm. for our district, mm-hmm. what kind of impact does the Brown Act have on interaction between different directors in different areas?
So it applies in the exact same way. Obviously, if you're talking to one other member, it's not a quorum and you can do that. But once you involve a third person, then it becomes an issue. And so, you know, there's no sort of special rules for districts versus at large. You still have to go through all the normal channels and be worried about that.
Same as
we're still a five member board.
Yeah, same as it is right now.
I understand, but I just, you know, see the importance of somebody talking to Nelly about something that in the area of the Stagecoach Inn, and then somebody else needs to talk about the Stagecoach Inn, as long as it's not a serial meeting type of thing.
It'd probably just be the same as it is now. If there's no special authority, you don't have to go through somebody. You know, like we still could just have all of our interests throughout the entire district, regardless of where we live. I don't have to like soccer.
Not having
been through this before, I just didn't understand.
Yes.
Yes, I thought of a couple more questions. Thank you. In reading the report, there is a line item here that I don't want to misstate, so I would like to read this. This is regarding to the maps. And I know, you know, Doug, you're going to kind of take the lead on this, on initiating this, and I read through the timeline. Obviously, there's various hearings and going through the iterations of when you finally, you know, say, okay, that's the map we're going to use. But it's talking about here, the demographer will draw proposed divisions after the first two public hearings and present the maps to the district. And this is my question, along with any legally adequate maps submitted by members of the public. Mm-hmm. So obviously this does not have to be done by anybody we hire. Anyone in the public could draw their own map and present it, but the qualifier is it has to be legally adequate. So can you tell me what represents a legally adequate map in this representation?
It's the two factors Chris mentioned earlier about equal population. So it has to be an equal number of total people in each division according to the census, well, the adjusted census data. And then the Voting Rights Act, which Chris mentioned here, is not likely to rule out any maps. So it's that process. And we actually love it when the community gets involved and is engaged enough to submit maps and add them to the discussion. And then we process those for you and present them to you just like any map that we prepare for you. So, and but when the map comes in from the public, we do that analysis of what are the population numbers, and then Chris will weigh in on do they meet the legal requirements.
And I certainly understand the population. You know, you've got 100,000 people, you make sure you got 20,000 in five areas. And
yeah,
I mean, there's a little buffer there of a few percentage points for flexibility. But when it comes to the Voting Rights Act requirement for the, you know, representation, mm-hmm. what are those numbers, percentages? How does that figure in, either equal across all the districts or one of them has to be special? How does that come into play?
Yeah, so the way it works, so we're talking now about the Federal Voting Rights Act, because the State Voting Rights Act just cares about districts, doesn't care what they look like. So the Federal Voting Rights Act, the requirement under the act is that if you can draw a majority-minority district, you may have to under the act. And there are some other things that you have to sort of look at and take into account to sort that out. But you have to be able to get to that 50% plus one. If you can't, you have no obligation to draw any particular district at all. So it really only becomes an issue where you have that ability to draw the majority-minority district. Given your demographics, I think that's very, very unlikely. You know, I have kind of tinkered with it. In fact, you know, there are very, very few, even just individual census blocks that have majority-minority population. So that's what Doug was saying. It's probably, in your particular case, not likely to rule out any map or require any map.
So with that being said, and also considering some of the processes that have, or I guess entities that have gone before us, if you go through that process and say, hey, we can't find a district that's going to comply with the federal act, that's no excuse for saying, oh, well, then we don't have to do it. You still have to do it regardless.
Right. Because you, it's not that you can't comply with the federal act, it's that you are complying. You know, that's under the federal act, you have met your obligations just by having the districts and under the state act. So but you know, in theory, the inability to draw a, under the Santa Monica case, a district that's even remotely close to majority-minority, in theory, that could be a defense. That's what the Court of Appeal held. But we don't know if that's going to hold up or not under the state act. And so it may be the case, depending on how they interpret it, that, you know, depending on how they interpret it, CVRA may just boil down to everyone's going to have districts. It may just turn out to be as simple as that. But, you know, short of testing that in expensive litigation, you know, the safest course, the safe harbor, is to go to divisions, even knowing that you can't necessarily draw that majority-minority district.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Is there, I'm thinking of our community right now, our city council is still elected at large, though it's certainly possible somewhere along the way that they may have to go to districts. Mm-hmm. Our school district for 2 years now has been districts, and we're going with districts.
Mm-hmm.
When you have multiple elected agencies in the same general community, is there any correlation between, say, the school districts divisions and our divisions, or are they totally separate? And you know, it doesn't really affect us, but I'm thinking of the county clerk's office, and they've got, you know, every home has a different mix of the city council and school district and park district and who knows else, what else, so that the the voters don't even know where they are.
Exactly.
Right. So the short answer is there. They can all be different, right? There's no legal requirement that they be remotely the same. Now, if you look at the school district boundaries and you say, hey, those make a lot of sense, you could adopt them. I mean, there's nothing that says you couldn't do that. But they have different considerations and concerns than you do. They're focused on where schools are and you're focused on where parks are. And so, you know, it most of the time doesn't work out that cleanly. But it's something you could consider. I mean, that could be one of the maps in the mix, right? If they have the same number of board members as you do, they just went through the process, so they should be balanced population-wise. You know, you could look at those and say, yeah, we want to consider that as one of our options. In terms of the clerk's office, clerk's offices have elaborate software to input all of this stuff. They'll figure it out. I mean, it's not to say that mistakes never happen, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good. So I wouldn't be concerned about it from their perspective. As long as you give them enough time, enough leeway in doing it now, they've got 2 years to get it in place. So, you know, that shouldn't be a problem.
I was just thinking of when you were talking about that, I thought, well, we're thinking of the main three, but we also have multiple water districts, sanitation districts, mm-hmm. Flood control districts. So they're already going through those iterations. Yep. We're just adding another layer on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, the probably the closest, just geographically, because your boundaries are so similar to the school district, that might be the one to look at, right? Unless there's another district that has very similar boundaries also. But again, you know, the interests are potentially different enough that it might just not make sense. But it's, you know, we can look at that.
And just in addition to like policy related interests of parks versus schools are very different realms, there's also where do the elected officials live?
Sure.
No, it could be that the school map would put four of you in one seat kind of thing. So that's where it gets very touchy as well.
Okay, any other questions?
I was just gonna say, I looked at the actual cost. So in presidential years, the highest is in 59,000 and in non, the highest is 35,000.
For savings?
That's the total bill for each year. So it'd be about half. Yeah,
so we're not saving huge amounts of money, just a little bit.
Yeah, 16. We have to pay one-fifth of the cost we normally pay. No, one-fifth.
Okay. Are we ready to make a recommendation? No other
question? If
it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Sorry,
George. It'd be nice if we have that choice.
And I think they should have allowed that to be part of the formula, but I'm just one person.
Well, I'm certainly not going into this excitedly and passionately. It's reluctantly at best, but and you know, a part of it is just like you said, Jordan, we've got a good group, we've got a good organization that works well for us. And as has been mentioned, we really don't have the demography that indicates there's a problem with it. And I would certainly say if we needed to revisit that just to make sure, but I think we kind of know our community, it may change over time and that may become more of an issue over time, but as of now, it's not there. So yeah, it's more of a reluctance. It's just like, it's working okay now, but it doesn't appear that that's an option.
Well, it right. seems to me that the main problem is that we have it's a monetary problem.
Yep.
Is that
exactly,
we don't have the money to, you know, counter sue or whatever the statement would be, we most likely would lose because nobody else has won. And so do we want to commit hundreds of thousands of dollars to this, or do we still want to? And we're still going to be spending a lot of money just to get through this. But I think that's the main consideration. I don't think any of us want to do this. We're happy the way we are. But it's just a matter of how much money do we want to put into this, and is it just throwing money down a rabbit hole? I think the problem.
The canal hole. The
way I was looking at it and seeing some of these expenses, especially you know the estimated $3 million to kind of push back against this, and ultimately you have to do it anyhow. That's the price of a new park, or at least a small park, or a rehabilitated community center. So that would just push our capital improvement program down several years.
I think what we would have to hope is that we could have the maps be drawn in such a way that in reality it won't make a difference. We get along so well, I can't imagine that any of us would be protective over our district in any way. It would just be a matter of being elected. I can't imagine any animosity, at least at this point. You don't know about the future, but at this point, I think we're for the good of the. What did you say, Chuck?
Nothing. And I would say, just again, based on the experience we've seen with our school district, where, again, I'm not on the inside part of that, and I haven't heard that, but I haven't heard any chatter either about, infighting about, someone's district versus district. It still seems to operate the same way as the school board in general.
Problems with everything.
The drama hasn't changed. The issues haven't changed. The representation hasn't changed. Everything kind of keeps working just like it always did. So I would hope that our effort would just continue that way. That there would be no infighting, no drama, nothing else. Just continue as is, and it just kind of changes the way we do elections. And hopefully that would be the end of it.
So do I have a recommendation? A motion?
Staff recommendation.
It's a resolution.
Oh, it's a resolution. Okay, thank you. I don't have my glasses on, but I thought you looked in there. And everything's a little blurry to me. I'm doing my best. So do we have a resolution to intend to transition to the bi-director division elections?
I'll go ahead. I would move that we adopt resolution number 111022-A. Declaring our intent to transition from at-large to bi-director division elections and outlining the specific steps to facilitate the transition.
And since it's a resolution, does that need to be read in time?
You still need a second.
All right, please second. And does that?
I'll read it. Okay. Resolution number 111022-A, a resolution of the Conejo Recreation and Park District Board of Directors declaring its intent to transition from at-large to bi-director division elections, outlining specific steps to be undertaken to facilitate the transition and estimating a time frame for action.
All in favor?
Aye.
This is very enthusiastically.
Yes. Well, and I'll clarify that. I'm supportive of it because of the financial demand or drain it would be on the district if we didn't. Not because I think it's a necessity.
Yeah, I think we all feel the same way. Thank you. Is anyone opposed? Okay, this motion passes. You opposed?
No. I just say something now that it's passed.
Okay.
Given that in addition to us in the room, sit Lolly, our new Acorn reporter is on the line. And I just wanted to, call your attention to the calendar, the timeline that's at the back. So this is a public hearing notice that's actually gone in the Acorn newspaper with the relevant dates. But just for the board and for anyone listening, that means basically every single board meeting we have for the next 2.5 months is going to have this subject matter on the agenda. So we look forward to working closely with our consultants and getting anyone interested involved in coming up with some maps.
Okay. So are we going to adjourn this meeting? Are we done? Meeting is so adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks so much, you guys. And it's already, our other agenda's out. It's already out. So we already have something.
See you again soon.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.